Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to another episode of the Speak the Truth podcast. What would you say if I told you that there is a very high probability, in my opinion, that the first Trump administration tried to overthrow Maduro's government inside of Venezuela, and it got thwarted by a rogue CIA agent and possibly a confidential human source for the CIA down inside of Venezuela, and the Biden administration ended up profiting off of it after Trump lost re-election, and Chevron Mobile might have made some money off of it, and in the meantime, we've got a decorated U.S. Army Green Beret war hero that ends up getting burnt on the back side of it. I'd say, personally, and I hope to convince you as we go through this, that you understand where I'm coming from and why I'm saying this. Meet Jordan Goudreau. He's a former 10th Group soldier, ended up getting retired. I want to say it was in 2016. Afterwards, he ended up starting a company, which we're going to get into here in a little bit. And that company eventually ended up getting hired on to overthrow the Venezuelan government. And he does have documentation to prove it, believe it or not. And yet today, when we look over here, he just got hit wanted by the FBI for what? Failure to appear, conspiracy to violate, not he did, conspiracy to violate the Arms Export Control Act, smuggling, Arms Export Control Act violation, Export Control Reform Act violation, violation of the National Firearms Act, and unlawful possession of a machine gun. How is it that he got hit with all of that? How is it that he ended up sitting down with presidents of a nation and signing a contract to overthrow Maduro? And then all of a sudden, as all of this is going on for years and years and years, when he's planning, he's making this stuff happen, he's down in Venezuela, he's doing all this crap, how is it he met all those people and did all of those things just to finally get rolled over on? Maduro ends up figuring it out. A couple of his guys get killed. A couple of his guys get captured, who, by the way, only spend 2 years inside Venezuela after they ended up getting captured in 2020. Well, did we ever see any signs of any of this? Like, could any of this have been done? Recently, he did an interview with the PPD Caucus, and we're going to go over that here in just a little bit so you can hear these words out of his own mouth. And I'm telling you right now, the things that he's going to say, I'm going to pause it, and I'm going to give you my perspective. I'm going to explain these to you a little bit more on what actually happened, like a little bit more of the insight on it. But first, I'm going to bring you guys over to here. This is congress.gov, and you're going to watch. I'm going to control F this. I'm going to go to Chevron. Okay, and I'm control F-ing, just searching for Chevron. And as you can see, it appears 12 different times on this document. Maybe you can, maybe you can't, but it appears 12 different times on this document when I go to search it. And this is U.S. policy. Now, this was written in this was December 6th of 2022. So this is well into Biden's presidency. It says, U.S. policy. U.S. government ceased recognizing Maduro as Venezuela's legitimate president in January of 2019. Now, remind me again who the president was in January of 2019. That's right, Donald Trump. And the Trump administration sought to compel him to leave office through diplomatic, economic, and legal pressure. Is that necessarily true? You're going to find out here in just a sec. The Biden administration initially maintained a similar policy, although U.S. officials held direct talks with Maduro in March and June of 2022 that led to a policy shift. In November, the Biden administration issued a license to allow Chevron to resume some operations in Venezuela after the Maduro government resumed negotiations with the opposition. So Chevron, oil and gas company, ends up making their way into Venezuela underneath the Biden administration. Imagine that. Now, do you think that would have ever happened if any of the policies maybe would have shifted under Trump and Maduro might not have been in power? I don't know. That's a very good question. But is it necessarily true that Trump was just looking at doing this diplomatically? Well, let's go all the way back 7 years ago, July 5th, 2018, article by The Guardian. Trump repeatedly suggested Venezuela invasion, stunning top aides, according to this report. Mueller Mountain Media coming in, gifting us Speak the Truth membership. Okay, so we know that Trump didn't want Maduro there. Trump didn't recognize him as the de facto leader. They ended up calling the election from 2019 false, fake, garbage, crap, rigged. And then out of nowhere in 2020, we ended up having U.S. mercenaries, is what they were called, getting captured inside Venezuela for attempting to overthrow the government. Green Berets, wouldn't you know it? So what the heck happened and how did we get to that point? Well, ladies and gentlemen, that same gentleman that I just put up on your screen a little bit ago, he wasn't going to court. He's not wanted for trying to overthrow the government. No, he's wanted for some BS arms export crap and possibly unlawful possession of a machine gun. And if you don't know what unlawful possession of a machine gun, maybe you ought to just go look up what the ATF classifies as a machine gun. These are BS laws, basically, is what they're charging him as. They're looking. They couldn't find crap on him anywhere else, and they decide to go and hit him with these. Why? And my thought is they want to send his butt to jail to keep him quiet and so that he can get Epstein'd. That's personally what Matt thinks, and I'm sure this is a little bit of a tinfoil hat moment for some of you guys. And I know some of it sounds pretty freaking crazy, but I want you guys to listen to him over on PBD. And I'm going to pause some of this as we start to go through it, because what this man says is absolutely reasonable. He's not like Mr. Anthony Aguilar that runs off complaining and crying about everything else. And again, the documents are there to prove it. He actually has a document signed. Signed documents talking about all this crap. So you can sit here and you can laugh about it all you want, but I want you to listen and pay attention to what this man has to say. And I'm going to pause it and I'm going to give more context to what this man's career is and specifically what he's talking about as it goes through.
But can you share with the audience why you're doing the podcast from a parking lot?
Thanks, Patrick. Yeah, no, I think people talk about lawfare all the time. I think this is the epitome of lawfare. I have been relegated to a homeless shelter, a VA homeless shelter. When I was in a hearing yesterday, the judge looked over to my attorney and Maricel Descalzo, who's incredible, by the way, and asked why Mr. Goudreau, why can't he just stay in an apartment? Why I have to stay at this homeless shelter, which I've been here fighting to stay here for the last, 5 months. And my attorney turned to the prosecutor and said, because they won't let him. They won't let him stay in just an apartment like a regular individual. The prosecution lost the very first bond hearing. The lawyer who was in charge at the time, she had joked about putting, Jeremy Brown and bragging about how she got Jeremy Brown in jail and another Green Beret. And they laughed about how I would be their third Green Beret that they would put in jail. The lawyer, the very first prosecutor, he actually stabbed the guy in Tampa. His name was Patrick Scruggs. You can pull the video up.
I want you to think about this. All of this went down in 2018, 19, and 20 when he ended up getting popped in Venezuela. And here it is, 2025. And I think he finally got indicted maybe in 2024. Took him 4 years? No, nobody would touch it. Nobody wanted to do anything until this freaking Clinton-appointed prosecutor ends up showing up. Clinton-appointed prosecutor ends up showing up and going, oh, BS arms freaking crap. Yeah, we can do that.
It's absolutely insane. And then after that, four prosecutors wouldn't touch this case for 4 years.
Yep, there it is.
Until a Williams and Connolly prosecutor under one of the Clinton prosecutors, who happened just to be in Middle District of Florida, decided to take the case right before the run-up to the U.S. election. How convenient. I am essentially a Trojan horse for the Trump administration. And I think, listen, let me roll back to the intro and like what you said about Operation Gideon, which was never Operation Gideon. It was always Operation Edgemont. But what I'll say about it is that's a beautiful CIA narrative. That's a beautiful CIA narrative. The CIA spun a tremendous narrative with the help of the AP, with the help of Rolling Stone magazine, Vice, this documentary movie that came out. If you read all of that, all of those articles and from back then, I think, and the Wikipedia page, I think that would be, that's a pretty tremendous narrative. The truth, however, is encapsulated in all the documents that are in the discovery, which me and my legal team have been poring over for the last, over a year now. Interestingly enough, there's a journalist named Ryan Morgan who works at the Epoch Times, and he wrote an article about 9 months ago now that they won't publish because it's too damaging to, I guess, institutions in the United States.
No, they're probably not going to publish it because it's going to burn a lot of bridges. That's why. What this man is about to lay out for you is exactly how the Trump administration, underneath Pence, ended up setting their policy for Venezuela, which we just saw, which was they want to have Maduro gone, but they want to do it without bloodshed, although Trump has considered military option. Well, this within itself is going to be a lesser military style option, and as he lays out his plan, you guys are going to hear about it, and you're going to see the evidence that goes into it. And then the CIA ends up getting involved, who, in my opinion, has screwed a lot of stuff up over time and might be loyal to somebody else. Remember how I said those who control the information control the narrative, which ends up controlling the actions and decisions of this country. Watch.
Discovery speaks for itself, Patrick. And let me just thank you for having me on. Thank you for the courage to have me on.
Yeah, Jordan, if you don't mind, yeah. Just do me a favor. If you don't mind, just take it from the top. Assume the audience has no clue what we're talking about. I have all your stuff that you've sent. I've read all the timeline. I've read all the names being involved. I got everything with Pompeo, with Pence, with Juan Guaido, with everybody that I've read everything.
I'm a strategist. So let me give you the 30-second brief on my career. I've been a soldier since I was 17. Started in the Canadian Army. Came to the American Army, went through several selections till I got to, I was in the CRIF, I was in JSOC units, the highest level.
So he talks about being in the CRIF, that's essentially like the U.S. Army Green Berets direct action teams, all right? Every SF group ends up having one. They respond very, very rapidly to very dangerous and ever-evolving situations around the world. That's what he is specialized in for a minute. And when he starts talking about the different SOCOM units and stuff that he's involved in, there's different what we call special missions units, right, that are spun out throughout the military. There's not just one, right, that exists that everybody dreams of because of a book and then a TV show and all this other crap. No, there's tons of them. And he's actually, I believe he's about to actually mention one. So he's been around and he's done a thing or two in his time.
Half of my training is intelligence, however, so human intelligence. And while I was doing all of this, I'm so insane and such a crazy mercenary that I was able to build three, fairly profitable real estate companies, one in Germany and two here in the United States. I did all these things because I was capable. I'm a capable person. I work hard and I have a very strong work ethic. Fast forwarding to when I leave the military, I get out and I start my company because at that time there's a lot of school shootings. I want to mitigate school shootings. It's a national problem, still is. And so I opened up it's more of a strategy company. I'm not a PMC. I don't take contracts like Eric Prince. I solve intricate problems. And I did this when I left the military. For instance, I had a team in Hurricane Maria. Maria hit Puerto Rico at half the island and we protected essentially AT&T personnel who are trying to reestablish communication through the island. And so I use negotiation skills with local cartels and gangs to just basically have them not attack my people and reestablish these communication networks.
And what he just said is very important. And that gives you a level of training and understanding when it goes down to human intelligence that he's talking about. There's other ways to get things done. Oftentimes, when people think about special operations forces or the military in general, they think guys standing there with a gun just to be able to get things down. There's a saying inside of U.S. Army Special Forces, inside of the Green Berets, and it's called, you're a Green Beret, you'll figure it out. It's a running joke because you're always getting given tasks that just seem insurmountable, but you're going to have to figure out how to get it done. In that case in particular, he's talking about going over and negotiating with the cartels not to attack them because it's going to be mutually beneficial. And I have no doubt that some wheels were greased along the way. So when he starts talking about Venezuela here in just a minute, I want you to take that into account, right? This is not just some retard that you have up here on your screen. This isn't just a random pipe hitter. This is a guy that's very well schooled in human intelligence, has been involved in different units and some very top tier units inside the United States military, some of which a lot of you guys aren't even going to know about.
Fast forward a little bit, I get recruited by the Trump administration under Keith Schiller, who's a good friend of Donald Trump, as you know, and worked in the White House as head of White House operations. Now, here's the macro of it. This is the pond that the Trump administration was swimming in at the time. The Trump administration was embattled, as we're seeing now with all the documents with Christopher Wray and the FBI, who's bugging congressmen like senators like Hawley and so on and so forth. I think there were eight. That Russia collusion hoax was on. This was on the heels of the Russia collusion hoax, as well as the Mueller report, which. The FBI agent who built my case, she was part of the Mueller report investigation. So all of this is connected. But the bottom line is there was a civil war going on in the White House. You had National Security Council, Mike Pompeo, Abrams, Gina Haspel, who were undermining the commander-in-chief's intent, President Trump's intent. And we see this today. It's still playing out. But back then...
That information is very key. And it's something that you're probably going to miss out is like he continues to talk as long as people aren't paying attention. Trump's in there trying to drain the swamp, clean the swamp out, and there's people trying to run this country who aren't in charge of it. They're supposed to take their marching orders from the top, but they think they know better. And what he's saying right here is those same people that were trying to undermine Trump as he was going into the election are the same ones, some of them, which were involved in this. And so you have people that are going against Trump. Trump wants to have Maduro removed, and there's people still currently inside of the government that didn't, that are still probably operating underneath Obama, Biden freaking doctrine, or those liberal thoughts.
The CIA would do just enough to not, I guess, come under the ire of the president, especially in Venezuela. So we see this, and I think the most definitive piece of evidence is when Mike Pompeo closes the embassy in Caracas. As you know, the CIA can't operate and can't do advanced intelligence operations without an embassy, without embassy support. And so when this embassy is closed, it greatly restricts the CIA's ability to do anything in Venezuela. This is by design, right? And so I'm approached by the administration to facilitate the removal of Nicolas Maduro and the facilitation of fair and free elections. I do my due diligence. I go down to see if it's okay. And might I just add, I mean, when you're recruited by the highest office in the land, it's not like you're going to say no, right? And so, yeah, of course I'm going to do this. They did at some point want me to meet, and I want to make this very clear. They wanted me to meet with the president of the United States, and I refused. And it was kind of strange to me that they would want me to meet the president, because one of these guys was a very astute human intelligence operative. He was part of Task Force Orange, which is the Army's advanced, it's a special mission unit. He knew what he was doing. The other individual was a Green Beret also, and he should have known.
So now that he's bringing up TFO, which I can't talk about, he probably shouldn't have mentioned either. But when he brings that in and he says that this member of TFO, for those that are in the know, and somebody from TFO is helping him with this, that is or Task Force Orange, if you will, that should set off a freaking bell in your head. You guys, I'm sure there's something on it on open source that you can go find. And that's all I'm willing to say about. But the fact that he brings that up and says that somebody on the administration was involved with TFO. He also mentioned the deputy advisor to Trump and several other names, that this is coming from the top, that this is what they want to do. Meanwhile, at the same time, we have Trump talking about military action in Venezuela. Now, all of a sudden, alarm bells should be going off in your head. Because at the same time Trump was talking about doing that stuff, this guy is being approached by high-level officials on his administration with very advanced backgrounds in fields such as this, asking him if he'd be able to get this job done.
Better. They asked me to meet with the president. I needed to deny the president's deniability, and that's exactly what I did. So I denied their, request to meet with the president. And, I don't meet with generals when I do operations. I just do the operation, and I believe the people that are at that echelon. I, of course, did my due diligence with Keith Schiller. I did my due diligence with other individuals that I was dealing with and who are making representations to me. And as a product of that, I decided, okay, they had relayed the full authorization.
Who is they that wanted you to meet Trump? What, give me a specific name of they that wanted you to meet Trump.
So this was Drew Horn and Jason Beardsley.
Okay.
Drew Horn, obviously, back that time was very connected. We didn't know how connected he was until we started reading his emails from the discovery. Same as, obviously, Jason Beardsley, he's a TFO operative, but these guys were both Green Berets. I had no reason to think that a fellow Green Beret would burn me. And so I believed what they were saying. I believed Keith Schiller when I was given these representations. And so I went forward. I also did my due diligence with the recognized Venezuelan opposition under Juan Guaido. I had a signed contract with Juan Guaido, which Let me just put it this way. I was in the room with two presidents.
Juan Guaido, for those of you who do not know, is the person that in that document that I just showed you from like USA.gov or whatever the hell it was, like the official U.S. government account, is the official, like that is who Trump recognized as the president at the time. So as we continue to put this on there, and you're about to see the signed document here in just a minute, there is a legit signed document. And Guaido is the guy that Trump said is the legitimate president. He even had him at one of his State of the Union addresses where he had him stand up and everybody clapped. That's who this man met with and had documents signed about getting rid of Maduro. And you don't get meetings with men like that, even as a Green Beret just randomly showing up to other places. You don't get trust in another government overthrowing people without some serious freaking backing, because that has major consequences.
For this, how does a crazy lunatic mercenary get in the room with presidents, diplomats, strategists, geopolitical strategists, and other members of who are working in the U.S. government and the Venezuelan opposition government and the Colombian government? How does that happen?
This is the president of Venezuela at the time. And you're saying the president of Colombia is who you're talking about, who is now,
correct,
I believe, a DJ somewhere in South Florida.
At the time, yes. At the time, it was Iván Duque. There's actually a really funny video where he lies on air. I went on W Radio, which is a prolific radio station all throughout South America. And I went on W Radio and I said, yeah, no, he met, you know, I can't remember the specifics, but we, you know, I had him on a cell phone call with another one of the Venezuelan opposition, and we discussed terms. And so I had the go ahead from the U.S., the Colombian government, and the Venezuelan opposition government under Juan Guaido. So we were cleared to do this.
Is this the meeting where they agreed to $212 million and then they ended up saying they're going to give $1.5 million up front, but they only gave $50,000? Is this that
correct
meeting? And
correct,
are those numbers accurate? The $212.9 million, $1.5 million, $50,000 for expenses at the beginning stages?
So the expenses at the beginning stages, they didn't care about. That is what Rendon said. But that was, I mean, really, it was a down payment on the $1.5 million.
It was a down payment on the $1.5 million. Then where does the figure $212.9 million come from?
This figure is essentially, it's arbitrary. It is essentially just trying to find backing for the later stages of this operation. The first stage of the operation is really supposed to be a link up. It is essentially, so the way, what I did, like the work that
Thank
I
you,
did
Troy.
For a year and a half prepping this entire thing was, I aggregated assets in Venezuela that were very close to Nicolas Maduro, who had task and maneuver units. That is to say that they were able to mobilize military units inside of Caracas to facilitate the capture of Nicolas Maduro, right? There was no invasion. There was no, you know, special operation, crazy invasion thing. It was, this entire operation was designed to be a military coup where Venezuela.
So there you have it. After he ends up getting the contract signs, after everything ends up getting like blessed off on, he ends up getting a little bit of a down payment, and they'll talk about where the money's supposed to come from later on. And yeah, it's pretty accurate where the money's going to come from, in my opinion, based on everything I've seen. He ends up getting different intelligence assets on the ground that he is recruiting, that his men are recruiting, in order to work his way in to the opposition force and have a different military force. Like he said, it's going, supposed to be a military style coup. So it's not him and his men that are overthrowing this. It's supposed to look like it is the people there that are overthrowing the government. You were never supposed to hear about this. It was supposed to look like a coup. You would have never known about this. It would have been a coup. Maduro would have been gone. New guy would have came in. Military would have stepped up. There would have been a free and fair election. They would have likely elected the guy that Trump wanted. And that would have been that. But that's not what happened. And all of this up to this point, in my opinion, sounds pretty reasonable for weird stuff that the United States government would want to get involved in, stick its teeth into, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. As he mentioned before, he doesn't think the other Green Berets would have put him up to this, and I don't think that's the case either. I think he got rolled over by a very key figure that he's going to bring up here at the very, very end. And his BS charges that he's currently sitting on, in my opinion, is a way for him to get frickin' Epstein'd.
Well, essentially, and it's not really a coup. You're taking a recognized dictator in Nicolas Maduro, and the military, the Venezuelan military, are actioning. I'm just providing a bit of a catalyst and some strategy.
Now, was this money, the 212 that's thrown around, is that upon completion and succeeding, you're going to get that money, assuming Juan would be in and he would have the access to that type of money to be able to pay you? Is that what the... But when would that payment be prompted?
So this was another meeting that I had with, you know, people in the White House. And it was made very clear to me that the money would flow once the first part was done. And the first part was quite simple. My plan called for three parts, right? The first piece was just to catalyze and to have these Venezuelan generals do the heavy lifting. To catalyze that, I needed to have a face-to-face with these guys to know that I was on the level, which this is not a playbook that I came up with. This is the playbook for successful regime change, I guess we want to call it, or whatever, like trying to oust dictators. And so I follow a very simple, you know, follow a pretty strict set of rules when I did this. Ultimately, what would happen is Maduro would have either... you know, he fled the country or been replaced, but really it was three individuals, Tariq Al-Assami, it was Cabello, and it was Maduro back then. So really the first part of the operation is to catalyze that change, have the Venezuelan military come in and remove the bad leadership. And then what ends up happening next is you have a counter coup. And this counter coup is where the money needs to start flowing. Drew Horn recognized this. He essentially, you know, yes, the money will flow once this first part's done. Great. I wasn't worried about the money after the fact. Once the counter coup is complete, the counter coup basically is when you have other warring factions, which is largely opposition factions or, you know, whoever else is going to be trying to take control once there's a power vacuum. I have enough money that I can basically align with the Venezuelan military and have some of my Americans come hit the ground and be able to provide mentorship and leadership to some of these, you know, to the valid Venezuelan military. The third stage is really just reconstruction and humanitarian, right? And keying up for fair and free elections in Venezuela.
And there's your key. All right. So once they're able to rise up, this is actually a pretty decent plan. Once the people that his men have linked up on the ground and they've given tactical expertise and guidance, knowing that the backing of the United States government's there. And for those of you that don't think this is a thing, I want you to go back and look up when Colonel Banks ended up meeting up with Ho Chi Minh back in like the 1950s. And what he ended up saying to the president of the United States back then about Ho Chi Minh and whether or not we were going to have to go to Vietnam. That's very well documented. The United States government does this crap all of the time, and we've been doing it for years and years and years. It's where the OSS came from. It's where the agency was born. It's where the Green Berets and the Squeals and everybody else. And so to pretend like the United States government doesn't do this stuff and it sounds like a fantasy to you doesn't mean it's not real. That money was going to start pouring into the country in order to help rebuild it afterwards. Once there is a government in play, you see, in order for the United States government to actually start funneling money into a country and actually be backing people, they have to meet a particular set of goals. And we can't just be shoving money into a country that's not quite there. That's why we've got so many problems with giving money to the Taliban and Iran and all of these other nut jobs around the Middle East. Same thing would be true inside of Venezuela. We don't want an evil freaking dictator receiving U.S. taxpayer dollars. But the moment that individual ends up getting removed, then U.S. taxpayer money can start flowing in there and propping up a legitimate regime that ends up meeting U.S. goals. Hopefully that makes sense to you guys.
This was the overall plan. This was never talked about in the news because, well,
got it. So who was going to be paying you the 212? Where would the payment come from? From whom?
It was told to me that the United States, this would come from the U.S. Once this is done, the money will flow. This is what was represented to me several times by the individuals I was dealing with at the White House.
This is the Drew Horn. These are the two names that you mentioned earlier, Drew Horn and Jason Beardsley, that promised that the money would come to you. And you believe them, that these guys, I should believe them, that the money is going to come from the White House.
Yeah, well, it was Drew Horn, right? So Beardsley wasn't part of those conversations. He was part of other conversations, but not the money conversation.
Don't you think if you're negotiating something that big, and Drew Horn is not a decision maker, and Drew Horn was an aide to Pence, if I'm not mistaken, right? So if he's an aide to Pence, you know, one may question why would you, just based on a meeting with an aide, automatically believe that this is a real thing?
Well, several things. There's a confluence of factors, right? So you have...
All right. So a lot of you guys are confused trying to keep up on this, and that's good. That's why I decided I wanted to do this. That's why I decided I wanted to have this show for you guys so you can understand what's going on. So I want to give you guys a quick recap, then I'm going to hit the super chats, then I'm going to go back. This is all the way back in 2018. Trump repeatedly suggested Venezuela invasion, stunning top aides, according to this report. Now, this is complete night and day difference to like Obama's policy, Biden's policy, and stuff like that were over there. And so what we're essentially saying is we don't want Maduro there. And during the Trump presidency, he was pushing very, very hard to get Maduro out. We're talking about his first presidency here. This is in 2018. In 2019, 18 to 19, this gentleman ends up getting approached by members of Trump's administration. Those people ask him if this can be done. They end up setting up meetings between him and the president, okay, Goudreau, whatever the hell his name is, that Trump wanted to have in office. You're going to see Trump praising him in a State of the Union address here in just a minute. And that gentleman that was just on your screen went over, he met, and he signed contracts to have a regime change inside of Venezuela. And he was in return supposed to be receiving $212 million. And that funding for that payment, for getting that done, was going to come via USAID. Now, that USAID money was going to get paid to the new Venezuelan government. All right. And then when that money made its way to the Venezuelan government, it would flow into his company in order to provide all of these other things. But I mean, it's his payment for getting things done. Does that make sense? And so what the U.S. government doesn't do is the U.S. government doesn't take a bunch of money and go, look, we're doing shady stuff and this is where we're spending our shady stuff money. No, they agree to do all this stuff ahead of time. So USAID shelling out $212 million. And if you don't know about USAID and all of their shady business dealings, please go look it up. It's getting way too far in the rabbit hole to bring this crap up to you guys. But that is very reasonable. The people that he was meeting with were underneath Mike Pence. They were members of particular special missions unit from within the United States military. And they all had blessed off on this and agreed, go get it done. Why? Because Trump didn't want Maduro in power. This guy agrees to go do all of that. And that's where you're at right now, is he's setting the stage for how all of that stuff ended up going down. Why is this a big deal? And why am I talking about it? Because in 2020, when all of this was going down, they ended up getting balled up by Maduro and his men. Several of this guy's men ended up getting killed on the ground. Two of them ended up getting captured and going to prison, but they were only inside Venezuelan jail for like 2 years before they ended up getting let out. And we'll touch base on that here in just a little bit. But you're about to hear how he got rolled over on. Now, the absolute, I'm going to save it towards the end. I'm going to tell you, I'm going to show you how they got rolled over on. He's going to say how they got rolled over on. I'm going to explain it to you how they got rolled over on, why that freaking matters, and then where that flow of money went. Vincent Kuznar coming in with a big old fat $100 donation says, hey, Matt, do you remember a while back when I asked if Russia was giving the cartel like $1 billion to drop people off at the border to spread division in the U.S.? Doubt if you do. I mean, maybe I wasn't all that far off if you throw China and drugs in the mix. Yeah, I do remember that. And I think you are right when it goes to China and drugs being thrown into the mix. And I also, by the way, if you're asking why Venezuela, why is Trump looking at Venezuela? Well, because Russia and China both have been sticking their freaking grubby little paws in Venezuela for a really long time. And I want you to picture this almost like the Cuban Missile Crisis, but now we are umpteen years later. All right. So this is like your modern day Cuban Missile Crisis. Okay. And the United States government, the Trump administration didn't like what was going on. Obviously, we had the Obama Biden administration that were there just before that. You know, Biden's dirty dealings taking place over inside of Ukraine with his son and several other things that were happening over there. So this is Trump coming in and trying to clean all this up. Pat Loudon says, you think a lot of the random BS that Doge found in the country spending was to prop up stuff like this? Yes. Not only do I think, I have actually, I'm not going to state it anymore, but because I already did, and I ended up pulling some of it down, but I did at one point in time point out some shady spending from USAID that went to a different unit to do a lot of things just like this. And it wasn't that long ago, and Doge ended up finding it and disclosing it.
T. Schiller telling me the exact same thing. You have full authorization from the White House. I have Drew Horn telling me you have full authorization from the White House. I have a contract with Juan Guaido, which he's not doing anything without White House approval. I have, you know, I have a White House meeting between Keith Schiller and two other individuals immediately following my meeting with Juan Guaido the Zoom meeting with Juan Guaido to sign the contract. And so everything, and furthermore, I don't.
Spaceman Spiff, is it connected to Leibelsberger? No. No, I don't. And I think that kind of catches me up on the super chats. At least that's what it's shown in my activity.
When I'm given a mission in the military, I don't, look, there's no generals that come and tell us that. I don't go and talk to the general and say, hey, are you sure that this is authorized? Maybe I think you need to sign, you need to sign your life. No, it doesn't work that way. Right. And there's no, and what's more is this, the president, and I don't care who the president is. I don't care if it's a Democrat president. I don't care if it's a Republican president. I don't care. The president, he's the president of the United States, and he requires deniability, period.
Yeah, so Drew and Jason are telling you that this is what we got approved, that if you do this, we're going to pay this, and you take on that, and you believe it, and you move on with the mission, trusting those
Nemesis,
two guys.
You're about to bite your own tongue.
Right. With several meetings, we met several times in Washington, D.C. It's a bona fide member of the U.S. government who has contacts in the National Security Council. He, you know, he's Trump's son's good friend. Furthermore, I mean, look, this, it wasn't just one meeting. It was several meetings over the course of several months. Furthermore, and Donald Trump's, I met with Donald Trump's, you know, the legal team of the president, George Soriol, Travis Lucas, who are telling me the exact same thing. No, you are good to go. A lawyer, Travis Lucas, read the contract, said, yeah, you're good to go.
Okay. So who is the high?
So that's also really important because you're not going to do shady things in another country that are going to affect national policy without double checking. You learn over time that you need to scratch each other's backs. Particularly, it's one thing when you're operating as a member of the United States military or an actual particular member of the government, you get certain protections that are afforded to you. When you're not, and you're doing this stuff on your own, you always keep people abreast of exactly what it is that you're doing, and you make sure that everything checks. And so he just said that he brought the contract, and you're about to see the contract. He brought the contract up, and he showed him the contract. The lawyers and attorneys and everybody else on Trump admin ended up blessing off on it. Andreas wants to know, will we see boots on the ground inside Venezuela? I don't think so. I'm going to actually give you my assessment on what I think is going on in Venezuela here at the end of this, because the goal remains exactly the same. Only the lines of effort that we're now putting forward in order to accomplish that regime change, I think, look a lot different.
Highest ranking person you met with, that there is documentation and exchange of them wanting you to do this?
Several. I have, well, it's Keith Schiller, Drew Horn, Jason Beardsley, you know, Juan Guaido. That's a contract. I have several.
So Juan Guaido, you have a contract, signed pictures together with him.
Correct.
And the president of Colombia. You have all that documented.
Right.
And is that in, if I go right now, is it public? If I go and look up pictures right now of you and Juan Guaido, can I find it?
That contract's public.
The contract that he signed is public with you?
public.
Okay. All right. So when you're doing that and you're going through it, at that time, you know, word comes out. But let me just stay on this real quick. What was the expectation? Was the expectation for you to do what? Was it to eliminate Maduro? What was the expectation? Is that the contract with the signatures, Rob?
No, there's no elimination. It's essentially just it's a legal action. It's just to arrest the sitting president, which is Nicolas Maduro, and put in.
So I want you guys to see that because it just flashed momentarily on the screen and put it up there for you guys to see. All right. This is legitimately signed by Jordan Grudeau, the guy that's sitting up on your screen right there. All right. Along with several other individuals. You've got the Republic of Venezuela administration signatures that are sitting up there as well. This is there. Juan Renan is also up there. All of those are up there. Witness signatures and
legal
everything.
Legal action is just to arrest the sitting president, which is Nicolas Maduro, and put in, you know, the rightful president, Juan Guaido, or, you know, just change leadership.
Yeah, I see the contract right here. The Guaido administration Silver Corp agreement. Rob, if you want to zoom in a little bit so I can see that and read what it says. Can you zoom in on that thing? Therefore, in consideration of matters described above and the mutual benefits and obligations set forth the agreement, they received under witness is the signatures are who? We have Jordan's one of them. Juan Benden is another one. Manuel, I can't read it, Retuerta or something like that. And then we have Sergio Vergara.
Right.
Who are they?
So Sergio Vergara is one of the strategists for Juan Guaido. The Juan Guaido signature is on the first, on the general services on the first, I think it's a 12 page. That's the longer contract. That's 48 pages or so.
Okay. Got it. So then this happens. You guys agree. You go. What happens next? Because I see somewhere where it says it was supposed to be 300 to 800 men, ends up becoming 60 with two boats. Walk me through how the mission got started, who was involved, you know, why it ended up failing. Maybe tell me what happened then.
And by the way, I'm going to reiterate. Before those contracts were signed, this guy went in and he was able to set up his different networks and all of that other crap before that contract that you just ended up seeing getting signed. That was October of 2019. Okay? So October of 2019, that's when that stuff was signed.
Yeah, so the CIA, so in the very first meeting where I was asked to do this by Key Schiller and members of Global Governments, which was the team that they were working under, Key Schiller is no longer in the White House, although he was meeting the president frequently in the White House. There was a Venezuelan opposition strategist who was a CIA asset. This CIA asset, there were several CIA assets. This CIA asset was meeting and basically, you know, there was a secret recording with this individual and one of his compadres that I had one of my men take, that essentially these individuals were, you know, bashing Trump and saying they don't trust President Trump. And they only trust the CIA under Juan Cruz, so on and so forth. And so these gentlemen, and I didn't know them at the time, and I didn't understand that until that recording, you know.
Now that's really important. A CIA asset, a confidential human source that was sitting down in one of the meetings, which means that the guy likely had connections over inside Venezuela, which is why he's an asset for the agency, didn't trust Trump. And that man was privy to all the information, and he says that he's got that man on recording. Got that man on recording talking about how he doesn't trust Trump. Not this gentleman, but the asset doesn't trust Trump. And he's sitting in one of the top meetings right before he gets green lit to go in.
Several months later, but these individuals were, I don't know what it was. It seemed like kind of a trap. They wanted to liberate their country, but they really just wanted the money from it. And so it was, you know, it was kind of a tricky, I guess it's just a tricky obstacle course to navigate. These individuals ultimately started working with the Colombian Intelligence Service and the CIA outright. Fast forward to when my men were in the camps, they basically had the, you know, the GPS coordinates for where my men were. So when the operation launches, the regime doesn't have to do all that much, right? So Venezuelan opposition gives the coordinates to the regime, and the regime does what they do. So,
and there it is. That CIA asset ends up saying, we don't trust him, we don't trust the government, and he got rolled over on. That asset ended up giving the coordinates to the frickin' Venezuelan government, or Maduro, who then was able to go over and ball these dudes up. That's what happened.
The heavy lifting in the, like, to come against, you know, this operation was done by the CIA, Colombian intelligence, Venezuelan opposition.
Okay, so, all right, was that it? Were the agreements being said? Yes. Terms of agreement right there. Open it up a little bit if you can. Zoom in a little bit. The terms of agreement. Jordan, I don't know if you can see this or not. He's just zooming into the agreement on what it says, which is $212.9 million over the course of the term. The amount of money needed to fulfill the first part of the service provider, $50 million. All the money will be backed, secured with Venezuelan barrels of oil. So, and all the monies in this agreement are in U.S. dollars. The administration agrees to pay. So the money was going to come from Venezuela, not the U.S. government.
So funny thing about USAID, Patrick, and the funny thing about a lot of the CIA moneyed accounts that are kind of hanging out and several.
No. This operation likely was approved by Trump. I see you guys asking in the comments section. So this was Trump's doing. Trump screwed this guy over. No. Trump didn't screw this guy over. People in his administration likely briefed him, said that there's non-military options that we can take that aren't going to have bloodshed, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. This is better than sending the military because, again, I can pull up the dang article again. Trump was talking about military intervention inside his Venezuela to get rid of Maduro. This was likely presented to Trump as a different option. Trump said, go for it. Just keep me posted. And then his administration goes and it takes it on all this other crap. The agency gets involved. How do you think that this guy up on the screen was able to make all those different contacts? You think he just pulled those out of his butt and was able to go over there and just randomly knock on doors and get contracts signed? It's not how that works. Because then he would have been undercutting the United States government. The U.S. government would have heard about this. He would have got his butt in hot water for something else. That's not how that works. So he does all of this, keeping it up and abreast. And what ended up happening was this asset for the agency ends up coming in and saying, no, 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 we don't trust Trump, and rolls over on the guy and turns him over to Maduro. That's what happened, according to him.
Fortune 500 companies under TSSC.
Sky God getting out 20 Speak
the
Truth memberships.
It was the Rendon Corporation in D.C. who was working with the Venezuelan opposition government to destabilize, doing low-level, you know, sabotage operations and whatnot, refineries and so on and so forth. So, yeah, perhaps on the surface it would have come from the Venezuelan government, but the truth is it would have come from the United States.
Got it. Okay, so it comes from U.S. It comes from them. So in this sense, do you think the president knows anything of what's going on at this point? Or do you think none of it's rolling up to him? It's just purely a Pompeo, John Bolton. These are some of the guys that, you know, of course, were not on the side of Trump. Do you think they're trying to manipulate this whole thing, overselling it, underselling it? What do you think is really the motive behind closed doors?
Trap. I think it's trap, period. You know, we've seen this. You saw the J6. You saw it with Russia collusion hoax. We saw the Mueller report. You've seen it with the Christopher Wray stuff. And all the actors were the same. And so why not? Why not use this as another attempt to attack the president, right? And so the president's intent is to... Let's be honest. Let me be perfectly clear as a military strategist. Why do we need Venezuela? And yeah, it's not, we don't need the oil. We need to deny oil to China, Russia.
Right. So he's going to go in and he's going to get into his different side on why he feels that things need to go the way they did. But that's how that all ended up going down. And it's actually really simple and really cut and dry. And that type of crap does happen, in fact, all the time. And I've seen multiple comments now, including that last super chat from Fox McCloud that says, feels like the Bay of Pigs invasion. Yeah, no kidding. So again, why is it important? And why do we think that other people were pulling the strings on there? Again, U.S. policy underneath Biden that ended up happening right there, right? U.S. government ceased recognizing Maduro as legitimate president in January of 2019. By October, That man had his contract signed. So January of 2019, they do away with it. October, the man's contract is signed. 2020, he ends up getting freaking balled up over there inside. Then enter Biden. Biden administration initially maintained similar policy, although U.S. officials held direct talks with Maduro in March and June of 22. That led to a policy shift. In November of 22, the Biden admin issued a license to allow Chevron to resume some operations in Venezuela after the Maduro government resumed negotiations with the opposition. There it is. Laid out, cut and dry for you. That's it. It certainly seems as if the CIA decided that they knew what was better than Donald Trump did. And it certainly seems as if the agency itself in the past was involved in some dirty stuff that goes down to Ukraine. And so was Joe Biden and his freaking son and a lot of other dirty people. And in this case, we have a carry-on or a carryover of a lot of different people running a lot of the similar assets. And when Trump ends up coming up with a way to end up having this military intervention for whatever reason, fails because people end up turning him over. And now all of the sudden, Chevron's going in and they're drilling and more money is flowing, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Now, the most messed up part, like I said, about all of this crap is the charges that they ended up taking him up on. It didn't have to do with anything really other than some BS firearms charges. Moving weapons in and out of the country. That's it. Moving weapons. That's what they tried to slap him on. Now, I guarantee you he didn't move that type of armory out of this freaking country without people knowing about it at the time. So why did they decide to charge him? They didn't have anything on him. They couldn't hit him with anything else. He was operating clean and above ground the entire time. And yet somebody comes in and hits him with some weapons charges? Seems a little bit odd, doesn't it? And he was supposed to appear in court and he ended up failing to appear today, I believe it was. So now he's gone and the FBI ends up hitting this out because he FTA'd. And they're calling dangerous, considered armed and dangerous, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, for all of this crap. I guarantee you the reason he ended up FTAing is because he doesn't want to get, especially after coming clean with all of that information, he absolutely doesn't want to get Epstein'd. If they get his butt in prison, he's going to be silent so fast it's not even funny. They're putting him up on federal charges. He'd be spending years in prison for that crap. And even though he has all the documents to sustain that these are the different things that he's doing, what he absolutely didn't bring up was these. Conspiracy to violate the Arms Export Act. He didn't talk about any of the paperwork that he had for that. He didn't talk about any of the paperwork he had to move arms or any of that stuff. So maybe they caught a loophole and they finally found somebody that was willing to do it. And the reason this likely he wasn't charged was because they didn't want him to bring up all of this information in a court of law because it's going to be presented. It would likely be presented. And then it would be made public that the U.S. government was trying to effect a regime change in some very shady ways and the agency ended up overthrowing it. Yeah, Bay of Pigs, very dang close. This is a massive issue. Now, this guy FTA'd after coming out public with all of this stuff. Do you think he's still alive? Or do you think maybe somebody got to him? Do you think he disappeared and we're never going to hear from him again and everybody's going to be like, oh, it's just magic. He's gone. I bet him opening up his mouth on all of this likely ended up getting him schwacked. That would be my bet. He was very adamant that he's got the paperwork and he's willing to fight it and he's doing everything right. And all of a sudden, now he's FTA. Failing to appear. Why? My bet is that the dude ended up getting schwacked after coming clean with the freaking administration's dirty, dirty dealings. That is freaking insane. Now, you want to know what my thought is and opinion when it goes down to Venezuela and what's actually happening down there? Why we're moving all those ships and everything else? Yeah, sure. I'll give you my opinion on that. When you start talking about the amount of drugs that are being ran from Venezuela into the United States of America, dude, you're talking about 10%, decent percentage, but pretty low. And Maduro is going to have to be working with those different cartels in Venezuela in order to move those drugs back and forth and have those different deals. So when the Trump administration goes down there and he says, you know what, we're going to put up this military blockade and we're going to start blowing up all your drug runners. Yep, we can call them terrorists. Yes, they are killing Americans. All of those things are very legitimate, but that is surface level of what the United States government's doing. Why? Because Donald Trump did not want Maduro in power all the way back 7 years ago, and he still doesn't want him in power today. And instead, the Biden admin actually started cutting deals with them and allowing U.S. companies to go in there and start profiting off oil. To hell with U.S. policy, to hell with everything else. Let's line pockets, follow the money. So now we're down there and we're blowing up all these different freaking drug boats outside of Venezuela. We're putting a lot of military pressure down there. Maduro knows he ain't going to be able to get crap done. I did hear right before I came on here, the possibility the Wagner Group ended up getting sent in from Russia over into Venezuela. Sure. I believe that. Why? Because those deals that ended up getting made to allow those drugs to get ran out of the country, well, now that's not happening anymore. Now those boats are getting blown up, and that's going to cause rift in between the two. I would be surprised if we start seeing some executions that take place and things like that happening down inside Venezuela, and then all of a sudden there's some fighting, and just like this guy described, there's going to be a coup and an overthrow, and then we're going to have a brand new puppet government propped up down in there. That's what I personally think is going to happen. Do I think we're going to put boots on the ground in Venezuela? No. Do I think USAID is going to funnel a buttload of money and get behind whoever it is that we feel like it's being done? Sure. Last I checked, U.S. government did just authorize covert operations inside of that country. So if we're running covert ops over inside of Venezuela and all of a sudden things start to move in the direction that this guy was just talking, well, there's more freaking evidence that what he's saying is true. Likely they're not changing the playbook too far. But that guy, he's either dead or you're never going to see from again. He's in hiding. I have no idea why he would have FTA'd today, because it certainly seemed like he had plenty of information that he was willing to give out and disclose. Wagner landed 6 planes so far. Well, there you have it. It's absolutely nuts to me. It's pretty clear, in my opinion, that the agency ended up rolling over on this guy. That information of all those different grid coordinates and the different units that they were working with, etc. Now, the craziest thing is that the men that ended up getting captured only spent 2 years in the Venezuela jail for freaking what? For diming out? For trying to overthrow Maduro? For trying to lead a coup? They didn't put him to death. They didn't put him in a hole to rot for the rest of their lives. 2 years. How much U.S. government intervention do you think took place to only get them to have 2 years in jail? I would bet a lot. And I would bet there was a dang good reason for why the government did that. Probably because the United States government was behind it the whole time. If the U.S. government was behind that crap, they'd have been like, meh, whatever. So be it. Keep them. We don't care. They went rogue. Have fun. Bye-bye. Don't do dumb things. Unless you're a famous female basketball player smoking weed in Russia, then they'll move Earth for you, right? Fox McCloud says the only difference is that JFK knew about the Bay of Pigs and had signed off on it. Yeah. And I think Trump likely knew a little bit about this. Let's see. We got some super chats to hit up here. Tristan Allen. Mental health. I got you, brother. We're going to have to talk off to the side on that. That's too much for right now. We will talk on the side. Right wing nut says, Matt, I think this dude is going to be a good deal harder to take out than Jeffrey Epstein. He looks like he can take care of himself. He looks like he can take care of himself. Thanks for covering this. Yeah, you know, you say that, right? But everybody's got weaknesses. And when you send weirdos after weirdos, all of a sudden it becomes pretty freaking easy. Everybody's got weaknesses, right? Especially when you're inside of a jail and they know your every move, your every freaking way. Wouldn't be too hard to get rid of him. Stacy says, can he speak to Tulsi? Maybe. I mean, he's brought up on federal charges. I would hope that Trump would acquit him if he ended up getting hit with these charges. Fox McCloud. Only difference is that JFK knew about the Bay of Pigs and had signed off on it. Yep. This is probably one of the most disturbing things, I think, that I have came across in a really long time. Like, this guy does have receipts. This guy does have receipts, and he does lay out the plan pretty well. And I remember when I first heard about this going, what the hell was that guy thinking doing that all on his own? Of course he's going to get balled up. Well, let's see. Agency is going to maintain contacts with those different military leaders inside where he would have embedded his men in. How long do you think it would take for him to infill into Venezuela with no information whatsoever and try to find those leaders and try to embed with them and get them set up and get ready and coordinate all of this stuff across the board? It doesn't work like that. He was likely handed off contacts from people that sent him down in there. The man, as far as I know, didn't have any operational experience in Venezuela. So how was it he was able to find all of those people? He was able to find all of those people because they ended up getting off. And I say, when there's layers to this, ladies and gentlemen, you start peeling it back and you actually start applying that critical thinking, all of a sudden this becomes a heck of a lot more clear. 97 Pepsi Cola. Have you seen the video of citizens in Europe and I can't even pronounce that, Michigan, requesting U.S. intervention after their mayor was killed by a cartel? Yes, I did see that. And they are being denied support. As a matter of fact, Mexico's president ended up coming out saying that, no, we've got this. We don't need military intervention from anywhere else. But the United States government is drawing up plans for some military intervention over inside of Mexico. And that brings to me the next point. With everything that's taking place inside Mexico, why would we focus so much on Venezuela and not Mexico, when clearly Mexico is the largest supplier of drugs coming into the United States? Like, clearly coming across the border there, but we don't do anything. There is a hell of a lot more going on with Venezuela than people are telling you. All you're seeing is surface level crap. Yeah, we're blowing up people running drugs. Great. What is the second and third order effects from that? And what is that causing over inside of that country? What is going to end up happening there? And even if it doesn't, can the United States make it appear as if the things I said are true? And I believe, yes, we can. And then you're going to see a coup, and then you're going to see a regime change. And then those people, those troops that are set outside, are likely there for peacekeeping or to go in and back up, or maybe to rebuild after the fight's done, all sorts of weird stuff that can end up coming out of it. Ladies and gentlemen, I hope you enjoyed this episode. I wanted to bring you something different. I wanted to bring you some insight into the situation. I wanted to bring attention to something that maybe not a lot of people are even aware of. You guys have been asking me about Venezuela for a really long time, and I haven't been commenting on it for a really long time for a really good reason. Now that all of this stuff is coming out, I feel the need that I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to start commenting on it, because to me, I feel as if that gentleman is getting burned. He got burned by our government. I saw the comment saying it's dangerous to talk about all this stuff. No, what's dangerous is a rogue CIA that feels like they can do whatever the hell they want when our intelligence community thinks it knows better and refuses to take orders and directions and sabotages the plans of the office of the president of the United States of America. And then good, honest Americans, American freaking heroes, end up getting fried. And their lives are now at stake because of this. Dudes got killed over this. Nobody cares. Multiple men got killed. Nobody cares. Multiple men spent multiple years in jail over this. Nobody cares. And now we have a man being put on trial in a very public manner that's been living in a freaking homeless shelter because the judge won't allow him to go anywhere else. Why do you think they put him in a homeless shelter? How much easier is it to get this guy schwacked inside of a homeless shelter than it is if he gets to go live in a random apartment? This is garbage. And this is something that every single person should be paying attention to, because this is the exact type of corruption that needs to get cleaned out. You guys are asking me if it's connected to Leibelsberger. No. You want to dig deeper into Leibelsberger? Dig deeper into Russia, in my opinion. All right? Maybe there you will find some answers. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to do it for me tonight. I'm going to go ahead and take off. I'm going to sign off. I'm going to be right back here tomorrow morning, 8 a.m. Central Standard Time. In the meantime, ladies and gentlemen, peace, love, happiness. God bless. I'm out of here.
On the hunt for lost ROI? Chart a course and find hidden profit potential with Acuron Corn Herbicide. It's the only herbicide strong enough to bury competing weeds and help you unearth 5 to 15 more bushels per acre. How's that for hidden riches? Uncover the real value of Acuron at Acuron-Herbicide.com. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.